morning.
Welcome to The Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty Labonte.
And we're delighted to be in the studio this morning. I'd like to say thanks very much to Denton Pearson for letting us join the radio audience on Saturday mornings during what's usually At the Hop. Great longtime show here on Raven Radio.
Indeed.
But it is the gardening season, and we wanted to get in and have a chance to take your calls at 747-5877 and also talk about what's going on in gardening in Southeast Alaska.
So we thought we'd start out this time with a little bit of a Garden 101, just to, you know, in case there's any new gardeners listening, people who are not quite as familiar with, well, you know, I just moved here. How do you garden in a rainforest? And the secret to gardening in a rainforest, of course, is keeping things a little drier.
Right. So the key component, especially for vegetables, is raised beds. And you can make raised beds out of a lot of things. Kind of the tradition is just boards, you know, just a square of boards that you then fill with soil and garden that way. That's pretty much a classic Southeast Alaska raised bed. But you can also just pile soil and raise it up. You can use rocks. You can use logs. You name it, you can use it. You could even use a tire.
That's right. I think the key is picking a spot where you can elevate the soil and also have a way to avoid walking in where you're going to be growing your vegetables. Most of our soils here are very high in organics. And when they get wet and you walk in organic soils, they get squishy and they really lose their structure. So you want to have this really nice spot where you're growing your vegetables, where I pretty much never walk in my beds. I sometimes will have to like put a board over them, a broad piece of wood, if I know I need to like stand in it. So just so I don't compress it as much as I would without that board.
I think another question is, so now what do we do? We've got a raised bed. Where do we get soil? Because there's no easy way in Southeast Alaska much of the time. And the answer is you make it.
Mm-hmm.
And what you'll find is people will move from their house and take their soil with them. It's a pretty funny thing, but it does happen. So there's two ways to go. One, if your area is... if the area you're going to work the ground in is ash-based soil, then what you mostly need to add is organic material. If the area that your soil or your substrate is from is forest-based or muskeg-based, then what you need is sand and mineral content.
Yes, and I have an organic-based soil. I have a forest soil, and I spend a lot of time actually trying to bring in sand. I actually think it wouldn't be a bad thing to bring in some ash because that ash has a lot of nutrients, but I haven't quite been able to bring myself to import ash.
Right.
But you do need a mix.
You need a mix, and you can see around town in Sitka, there's places where almost nothing is growing, and then you see that light brown colored.
Yeah, kind
so
of
that's, that's ash, and the reason nothing is growing is because there's no organic components in it that really are going to feed. I mean, eventually it will.
Right.
You'll get a layer on the top, and plants will grow. But that's the main thing. If you are starting from nothing, your basic recipe in Sitka is three parts. One part soil or whatever your substrate is, one part sand, and one part organic. And the organic can be beach kelp. It can be waste from the brewery. It can be coffee grounds from the coffee shop. It can be your own compost. It can be a mix of all these things. If you have access to rabbit manure, you can use that right away, or other composted manures. You don't want to use a fresh manure other than rabbit because they're too hot. That means they're too high in nitrogens.
And some actually pretty disgusting.
Yeah, and the rate at which they're going to be doing the breakdown, that organic breakdown is too much for little starts.
Yeah, I tend to put all of my when I get manure, I don't have any animals out on the island, but when I get manure, I pretty much compost all of it. I think it really helps, and it heats up my other compost because I compost all of my kitchen waste that's safe to compost. And I like to use that in there. But kelp is probably one of the bigger things I bring in. I occasionally haul home the brewer's waste because it is a good source. And all my coffee grounds go into my garden as well because it's a great nitrogen source. And pretty, yeah, it doesn't, it also, we usually recommend herring eggs.
Right.
It has not been a great year for herring eggs. So not so many of those around, but your alternate nitrogen sources in terms of a composted material would be really coffee grounds.
Yeah. The other thing about compost is that there's lots written about compost and there's a lot of techniques and to optimize your compost. And I'll let you know, I'm a pretty passive composter. I spend my active time really working more on my beds, my vegetables, my flowers. So I'm kind of passive at composting. But when it's finished or when it's at a place that it's usable, it is black gold. So I think it's worth it to do compost, even if you don't want to get all super fancy and turn it and optimize it and weigh your components that you're putting in one thing and another. But composting in the long term is a great source of organic soil builder material.
I think that the nice thing to do with compost, even if you're not doing any of the turning and, you know, being very diligent about what you put in it, is to cover it. Because that will at least keep the temperature up in there and it'll keep all the, you know, excess rain when we have it, you know, really slows down that decomposition. So if you keep it drier, it will grow better, even if you're doing a passive compost.
Oh, my goodness. This week I went ahead and we have a new cover on our compost. I opened it up and started stirring. That place was steaming hot in there. It was like, you know, amazingly how much composting was going on by keeping it a little on the drier side. So, you know, we're pretty lazy about our composting at our place, but we've certainly, with both kitchen waste and garden waste and some wood chips and waste from coffee and brewery, we've really built something that is pretty invaluable.
Yeah, no, I use it all the time. The other types of fertilizers I use are basically bone meal and blood meal because those are pretty good sources, I find, of both phosphorus and nitrogen, which are usually the pieces that are missing in terms of main plant nutrients in our soils.
If you just don't have those or don't have access to those, you can certainly use commercially bagged compost or commercially bagged chicken manure, steer manure. Sometimes you can buy bat guano. That tends to be pretty expensive. There's nothing wrong with any of these. Chicken manure is variable in how much weed seed it has in it. Steer manure can have a little bit, but not as much usually. So these are good sources as well. And if you're not brand new and just starting from scratch, but you've had your beds for a while and you're wondering why productivity seems to be off, it's because you probably, a combination of Mother Nature and the rain leached out a lot of the more nutritious components, or you've actually used them up by growing plants in them. And what your soil's looking for is more organic material and specifically something more fertilizer-like.
Yeah, usually that's the nutrients you start burning through. Although I've noticed with my organic soils as that, you know, because they're drier, because they're warmer in those raised beds, they do decompose a little faster. So my raised beds start to kind of shrink. So I also need to renew those with various sources. And yeah, it's a big gathering game with, you know, seaweed and whatever. If you have a small garden, maybe you want to just go for like buying bags of soil periodically. But my garden is way too big for that. So it's not in the realm of possibilities. But there's lots of options for folks. Yeah, just keep your eyes open when people have overburden that they're trying to get rid of. That's not a bad place to get soil. You never know quite what you're going to get, and you may want to cover it and sift it and look at it for a while before you really build it into a garden. But still, soil, it's a good, you've got something to start with then.
And if you're not starting from scratch in terms of, say, flower beds or perennial beds, they do really appreciate renewal. And that doesn't mean digging everything up and renewing the soil. It simply means laying down a layer of compost or other not too rich fertilizer to help keep those beds have enough nutrition as well. Perennials don't need a lot of fertilizer, but they really need some with our rainy climate, mm-hmm. leaching soils all summer and winter.
Right. So for easy plants, some easy vegetables and some easy flowers, we have a few recommendations. One of my favorites to grow that seems to work without fail are actually peas. Snow peas or snap peas, whatever kind of peas you want to grow. I think, you know, that is an easy thing. I tend to soak mine first. I know some people don't, you know, make your choice. Plant it how you want to plant it. They do mostly need to be trellised. And it's always good to put the trellis in when you plant the seeds.
Oh, those fun times. It's really almost any of the greens that mm-hmm. you can buy the seed for. So lettuces, kales, the mescluns, the
right. spinaches,
chard,
arugula.
All of those grow well here. And the other nice thing about them is they're fairly fast to mature. And so you should be able to really be eating something out of your garden.
I think so. What the other things I really like to grow? I love to grow carrots because carrots are one of those things that I can taste the difference in my homegrown carrots versus store carrots. Now, I'm not saying anything bad about store carrots, but they have to ship them. They have to, you know, pack them and ship them. So they're, you know, almost not going to taste as sweet. They just can't. So if you have a sunny spot and you have a little bit of depth to your soil, carrots are just the way to go. They just taste so good.
I think another one that's pretty productive, it takes some space, is broccoli. Mm-hmm. For me, that's something that goes over well in my family. And I grow broccoli both in my greenhouse, which is not necessary, and outdoors at the same time, hoping that they're going to mature at different rates. And then what I find in my greenhouse is that they do better in terms of the side shoots. I don't know why it is, but I seem to do better on side shoots in my greenhouse broccoli than my garden bed broccoli, but I have both of them going already.
Right. Well, I also like to grow cauliflower. Sometimes cauliflower is a little bit fussier for me, but usually I get nice heads if I am taking care of them. One thing that does happen to me periodically is that because I have raised beds and they're well drained, I actually need to water. Those crops actually need a little bit more, liquid
tending. Yep.
to get to full, nice, beautiful size, but oh, they're very delicious as well.
They take a lot of room. That's one thing to keep in mind. You really need a lot of space to grow cauliflower and quite a bit to grow broccoli as well.
Right.
And, crowding them just means they don't have the same productivity. So that's not a great balance. The other thing I think that's pretty easy to grow here and quite fun and different is growing potatoes. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of gardeners that do and don't realize that that's anything different, but many a places people don't really grow potatoes. They're not that expensive to get at a grocery store, so why would you bother? But here, I don't know, digging potatoes in the fall is so fun, and I tend to grow potatoes of all different colors and shapes and sizes, and so it's just a beautiful thing when all those potatoes come out of the ground.
My favorite ones to grow are the fingerlings, because you usually can't buy those in the store anyway. So I tend to grow the ones that are a little bit different. I put more space into other things, but I really do like to, I love digging them. It's kind of like an underground Easter egg hunt, I guess. But the fingerlings are some of my favorites, and they're all out in my window with
greening
nice
up.
Buds on them. Yeah, it's not that it's too early to plant them. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
The other thing that there's been going on in Sitka is there's been quite a bit of focus on growing the potatoes that have grown in Southeast Alaska for a long time, and they're described as Tlingit potatoes. I'm not sure that I want to call them that. They're certainly traditionally grown in Sitka, but they are potatoes. And I saw some questions online recently asking, well, what do we do with them? Do we do something different than potatoes? And the great news is you don't need to do anything different with them. And they seem to be highly productive and potentially somewhat easier to grow here, I think, just because they've grown in this climate and been selected for our climate for generations. So if you can get a hold of one of those potatoes from one of your neighbors, I don't believe it's anything you can buy. There's been a nice Forest Service project growing some for the community, so you might see if next fall you could get a seed start or two for your garden next time around.
Right. So potatoes, peas, there's lots of different vegetables you can grow. Some of the flowers I like to grow from seed that are, I feel like, are super reliable are things like the calendulas. So if you're in a place that you're used to growing marigolds, I'm not saying you will not succeed with marigolds, but I think you will be more successful with the calendulas and still get that nice splash of orange that you might want in your garden. And there's lots of different varieties. I've been kind of in love with a variety called Touch of Red because it has a nice little back of the petals is a little bit redder, in some cases much redder. And they just have a nice color. And I've had them over winter here as well. They were almost made it this year, and then they were taken out sometime in February. But those are good.
You can also collect seed from calendulas and replant, you know, and start them. So once you have seed, if you can nurture a few of those seed, the flower heads into seeds, you can have seeds for the next year as well. Another really easy one are nasturtiums.
Yes.
And nasturtiums come in so many shapes and colors these days. So if you just are going to go with one flower and you want something really satisfying and a lot of productivity, nasturtiums, that's your choice.
So another one from seed that I try to grow every year are sweet peas because I love the scent. And I actually, which reminds me, I was going to talk about another annual that I don't usually start from seed, but I buy because of that same reason. It's the scent. So sweet peas, again, variety of colors, variety of sizes. I think they grow very easily. They need something to clamber over, but you will be rewarded for those. And the other one, I'm not going to surprise Molly with this, and because I just picked some up. I brought a couple of 4-packs, is stock. And stock is a plant that you will overlook if you're not gardening with your nose. And because they're not super showy flowers. But oh my goodness, a few stock plants mixed in either your bed or a container where you walk by is so wonderful.
And if you don't know what we're talking about and you're like, wait, what is she saying? She's saying stock.
S-T-O-C-K.
It's funny. It's an old-fashioned plant, actually, from gardens, say, of your grandparents. They've been here all along. But anyway, they do well in Southeast Alaska, and they are scented. So that's fabulous.
Gosh. Yes. So those, I think, are some of the easiest flowers. It doesn't mean that those are the only flowers you can grow here. And we've just really mentioned some annuals. But if you're just getting started, sometimes it's nice to start with a container with kind of a mixture of a few vegetables, maybe some herbs, and a couple of, of these annual flowers. And then you have this nice little something to enjoy with both your eyes and your taste buds. And if you use nasturtiums or calendulas, for that matter, both of those, the flowers are edible. Actually, nasturtiums, the leaves are too.
There's so many perennials to grow, but we're not going to go down that pathway. Instead, we wanted to talk a little bit today about the idea that you're in charge.
Yes.
And I know that may sound ridiculous, but once your garden is underway and suddenly everything is coming up and it's so exciting, it can be difficult to really have the discipline, the self-discipline, to pull out the stuff that is taking over and make sure that the plants you want and are trying to nourish and encourage are thriving.
They have a chance. And to give them that chance, sometimes you need to remove other plants and not just the ones you're like, well, yeah, we know we need to pull weeds, lady. Just excess numbers of even the plants you want. Or excess numbers of some plants I hate, which I'll talk about later. but at any rate, a lot of your perennials that you love, if they're doing super well, and I tend to grow things that are very happy and do super well and kind of expand. In order to have ones that still look good, I need to dig some of those out, as painful as it can be. You can share them after you dig them out. But you probably will want to start taking control.
Absolutely. So some classic ones that I've been pulling this last couple of weeks in my garden are the bleeding hearts, the little pink running bleeding hearts. They try to take over my whole perennial bed. And they love to try and choke out the rhododendrons. They can't, but they want to try. The pulmonarias are gorgeous, mm-hmm. especially that brilliant blue one.
Yeah.
But it is also one that runs around, tries to take over. So both of those have been coming out by the handfuls in my garden this last week or so.
And when I tend to let go, I let it flower, and then I start yarding it out, are the forget-me-nots. So I got forget-me-nots in my garden. Actually, the other plant that fits into this are the little yellow stream violets, which I have in my garden, and I let them bloom, and then I start pulling. There will still be seeds there. There will still be plants there, you know, as many as I want. But I have to get pretty, you know, draconian with those plants to keep things under control. I enjoy the splash of blooms, but then it's done.
And then the other thing to keep in mind with the idea that you're in charge is those plants that are constantly available to you, that everyone's giving away.
And there's a reason.
They are being generous and thoughtful, and you may want some, but ask and be clear about what you're getting. One of the ones Kitty and I are both struggling with at the moment are the Campanula glomerata, which in a perfect garden setting are pretty stunning plants.
They're gorgeous.
But they are nasty at the same time in terms of how much they want to take over the world.
They drive me crazy. Actually, before we got started, I was raving about plants that spread by underground runners. And that is one of them, that plant. So it's like you can pull them out, and they are going underneath the soil to find new spots. So you will be pulling them out, I don't know, until you stop pulling out things in your garden.
Yeah. And I should say the local name is China Mary. So if you know that plant, that's a campanula.
Yeah, there's a lot of different campanulas. So and there's some that are much easier to keep under wraps. But that particular one is just a real tough little bugger. I actually have decided that no ground covers will ever come into my garden again, because that's what I spend a ridiculous amount of time pulling
managing,
out of my garden.
Right.
It's just like, this is nuts. I don't need these things. I'd much rather have individual plants that form a clump. Yep, I got to divide those drumstick primroses, but they don't take over the entire planet, and they still look good. So think about ground covers before you plant them very carefully.
So there's so much to do in the garden right now. It is, we've had a pretty warm May, as May goes. We're past, I think, frost-free, no guarantee. We've
right.
seen frosts into late May and early June before, but the weather trend at the moment, it hasn't been in the 30s in my yard for a few days, and that's a pretty good indicator.
Mm-hmm.
I can really tell suddenly things are coming on,
right.
and it's not about how warm and sunny the days are at this time of year. It's actually how cool are the nights. So, you know, getting after your weeds, of course, that's always the thing. Pulling out anything that's choking other things, and then encouraging other things that you want to have happen. One thing I want to have happen is my raspberries.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an important time to look after your raspberry bed for productivity pretty soon. And what that means is cutting out the old canes and potentially sweeping or raking up all the leaves underneath.
Right.
If you struggle with rust, which I have some rust in my raspberries, but I've been able to manage it very well by cleaning all mm-hmm. the last year's leaves up. I mean, down to bare soil. It's kind of, they look kind of like, whoa, what are you doing to us? But take that all away, either throw it away or burn it. I burned it this year. Don't put it in your compost pile because the spores of the rust are splash borne. In other words, when it rains, it splashes them from the ground up onto your new leaves coming out. And that's how it happens again. So if you take all that material away, then of course you've got to do something under those canes, rebuild with fresh compost, a layer of seaweed or something like that. And then your raspberries are going to be going to town.
And if you're wondering what rust is, it just looks like small orange dots on the leaves. And if you look closely at those orange dots, you can see that it's not just a flat surface. There's a little structure to it where the spores are being released. There are rust resistant raspberries, and I've been fortunate. I accidentally managed to get one, so I don't struggle with that, but I still do that hygiene thing, both with the raspberries and actually with my currants as well, because there are lots of diseases that follow that same sort of path. If the leaves that were diseased are on the ground, the spores or, you know, bacteria, whatever it is, but usually it's spores, can be splashed back up. So just hygiene is an important thing in gardens.
The thing to bear in mind also is that the rusts are not at all dangerous for people. So even if you have rust on your raspberry leaves, your raspberries that your plants produce are completely edible. They're going to be tasty. Everything's fine. So don't feel like you need to yard out your raspberry plants and start over, because probably with a bit of rust around, they're going to come back. The other thing is salmon berries and raspberries are very closely related. So some of those pathogens can, you know, potentially be back and forth between those two plants. Not necessarily, but it could be. So your better bet is to manage and do the hygiene thing, and you should be doing really well with raspberries.
So another little task you can work on is your rhododendrons. Rhododendrons like to be fed, not too much. This is the Goldilocks thing. Just the right amount of rhododendrons. This is, Molly and I have said this for years, this is the one time we actually read the instructions on the box of fertilizer and actually follow them to the letter in terms of feeding our rhododendrons, because if you feed rhododendrons too much, you can kill them.
Or they look burned. It's really interesting. And it isn't the day you put the fertilizer on.
No, it's later.
It's as the season drags on, all of a sudden your rhododendron leaves all are splotchy and falling off. Oftentimes that is about fertilizer burn in a rhododendron. So understanding a little bit about rhododendrons, perfect time to fertilize rhododendrons is when the flower buds are swelling. So that's probably sometime now or within the last month. And then, again, as Kitty said, we both use commercial rhododendron food and read the package. The other thing to know is rhododendrons are very shallow rooted. And so I think that's why they're probably easily burned, is that their roots are just right there close at the surface. And then you want to put that at the drip line, which is sort of the outside margin of the edge of the plants. And then don't smother your rhododendrons in heavy piles of seaweed or compost. You can certainly put some on, but the reason they're shallow rooted is, well, I don't know the reason, they just are, and they like air in that mix. So a coarser organic material, perfect for rhododendrons.
Yeah, I don't do any cover around my rhododendrons at all. They love our soils. They like our acidic forest soil, so they are very happy on their own. The place where you see rhododendrons that sometimes don't look happy here at all is if they're placed in a lawn. So even if there's like a, you know, kind of a dirt circle around that rhododendron, if you're feeding your lawn that makes your lawn happy, that is going to make your rhododendron unhappy. So that combination does not always work very well. So think carefully about where you put your rhododendron. If you really don't have a good spot for one in your yard, think of getting a smaller one and putting it in a container. They actually do super well under those conditions.
You may have to water it if you have it in a container. I mean, I know we often don't believe we need to water anything here unless it's new. So if you're planting a new garden bed, a new tree, or a new shrub, keep in mind that even though we have plenty of rain most of the time, new plants need consistency. So if we have a dry spell, all your new plants, you're going to want to water them.
Yes, indeed. Well, we are just about out of time for this edition of The Garden Show. We will be back on May 25th at 10:30. And remember, it's a call-in, so we're just rambling on, but we are happy to take your calls as well. And if you have any questions ahead of time and you want us to address those, you can, what's the best way to contact us, Molly?
You can look for us on Facebook. You can send them to the radio station, the KCAW Facebook page. Any of those will work.
Yeah, so we are happy to, it's nice to be back here again and talking about gardening, and it's just so exciting to see like all the plants starting to get pumped up. And I guess one last piece of advice I have for you if you're a gardener is go around and look at other people's gardens and think about what you like about their garden and see if you can recreate in your own. And if you can't, well, just enjoy it. You are listening to KCAW Sitka.